Hello and welcome back to the EV Cafe Takeaway. Yes, it's that podcast that's focused on a zero emission future that we all hope for. And every week we get fabulous guests from across the industry. And of course, you know who it is because you clicked on the big picture of him just before you got here. And it's the wonderful Alan Davis from Electrosure. Alan, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're very well. And in fact, that's an unusual question we don't normally get asked. We don't get the how are you bit.
No, it's only polite. You've got to ask.
Yeah, but even if you don't mean it.
No, I do mean it, so I want to know. And over to you.
Always makes us really nervous because suddenly you've got to think about yourself for a minute.
I was going to say, it's a fantastic deflection tactic, isn't it? Right, away with you. Don't ask me anything.
Well, Alan, I can confirm that I am very well, thank you.
Excellent.
And that's really nice of you to ask. And that's the last question you get to ask. How are you, John?
I'm brilliant, thank you, because Alan and I have known each other for some years, and to be able to get to do this, it kind of condenses all of those years into a 50-minute podcast, which is just fabulous, because I first saw Alan at an event, and he was talking about, well, I'll let him tell the story. Alan, how did we meet?
it was many moons ago. No, it wasn't really. It was, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it was 5 or 6 years ago, I think. We'd been doing some work with Green Fleet for a number of years in exhibitions, etc. And completely out of left field, I was asked to attend a round table at Edgbaston, I think, actually.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It was the next day, and it was, oh yeah, just turn up and talk. And I was like, oh, okay, all right. I'd not thinking it would be filmed, compared, recorded. Anything I was going to say would be taken seriously. I had visions of me and a couple of people sitting around a desk for a few hours and chanting away, and it turned into, it was quite formative, really, I suppose, because certainly in this space anyway, from a personal point of view, I felt like I found my voice that day. It was a little bit daunting to start with. It was, even though you gave me this big build up, John, of he knows the nuts and bolts and he's a spark and this, that, and the other, and which was true. I wasn't convinced that anybody would want to hear that in that sort of arena. I had a sort of predisposition of how it was going to go and the type of people that might be there. And it turned out that actually, there were some question marks around the sorts of things that we knew a lot about. By consequence, I spent a lot of that day talking about, earthing and how chargers go in and how you support chargers and back offices. And obviously this was a long, long time ago in terms of the industry. Like we've come a long way since. So it seemed to be sort of a breath of fresh air to a lot of the people in the room who had dipped their toes in initially, had a go with varying amounts of success, dare I say, in the most case, limited amounts of success. And it gave us the opportunity, well, gave me the opportunity at least, to not only explain how it can be done better, but also to feel justified in the fact that I was validated, I suppose, or vindicated in the way that we had approached things, and that kind of electrical background and coming at things, as you say, from a nuts and bolts perspective, actually made things a little bit more understandable for the room. So yeah, that was, gosh, as I say, about 5 or 6 years ago. When I say I was daunting, I still talk about it now when I ask any of my team to do public speaking, when you go around the room and do the introductions. And I was like, I'm fine. Everything's all right. And then you went to me last, John, and you said, "And Alan, could you introduce yourself?" And I remember saying my name. And then I swear I got pins and needles everywhere. I was aware that my voice was doing something and I was aware that my mouth was moving, but I have no idea what I said. And the panic of, you have to stop talking. You have to round this off. What are you saying? Stop talking. And it caught me by surprise. Obviously I kind of warmed into the day and whatever else, but yeah, that I always talk about that as take a deep, like anytime I'm talking to one of my guys about, you know, doing some public speaking, take a big, deep breath. You know your name, relax, keep it nice and simple. Don't over elaborate. You'll tie yourself in knots and then give yourself that minute to settle. And anyway, I didn't that day. And it was, it still lives long in the memory, that one.
What a perfect place to start. I love this because, of course, fast forward 5-6 years, you're now leading the Electroshore business and you've really grown into your skin. And also, we talked a little bit off air and we're going to come back to it, but you also had this kind of performer, maybe a little bit of, you know, treading the boards, music, all coming through you. And it took you to that point. What do you think was that nervousness and what has been the key over the last 6 years to building your confidence and building into the leader of a business that you now are?
I think I touched on it earlier in that coming into that room that day, there were a lot of people who, bearing in mind, everybody's already introduced themselves. So everybody's already said, I manage 2,000 vehicles on a 60 depot fleet and this, that, and the other. And I'm going, I'm an electrician. Is anybody going to care that I'm an electrician and I install chargers? As you say, Paul, you know, when I've done a bit of, you know, performing theatrically or musically or whatever else, usually I'm in a group of people, there is a purpose for me being where I am, usually to make a lot of noise, and I understand what that is, and off I go, and the people in the room are usually there to see and hear what I'm doing. On this case, I just wasn't sure whether I was going to get a lot of eye rolling and a lot of tutting, or whether I was going to get people going, oh, that's interesting, this guy might actually be able to help me. Thankfully, it was the latter. But I think also, and you know, anybody who has been in a position where they are at the front end of, or you know, my position where they run a business, it matters. And when it matters, it weighs heavier than if somebody in the street just asked me what my name is and to give me a five minute, tell me what you do for a living. Oh yeah, you know, at a party, whatever, I do this. And it doesn't really matter if you stumble over your words and if you kind of misexplain something, but it does in that setting. So these days, that is a little better rehearsed. I've said what I do a few more times maybe than I had, and I am a little bit more comfortable with maybe who I am as well as a person, which helps. So by consequence, as you say, I can be a little bit more relaxed about it, and you know, that kind of comfortability of being in front of cameras doing stuff like this or whatever, it comes across a little better, I hope.
Well, so far so good, but let's not go too soon.
Don't jinx it.
But I think it's important at this point to understand what this Sparky that knows a few nuts and bolts now does and what Electroshore is. Give us the lift speech and the understanding of how you are making a difference in the market.
Sure. Electroshore, at its very core, is an electrical contractor. We're electrical engineers, we're electricians. That was my initial training. I qualified in 2013. I've had a series of apprentices, most of whom still work for us. We started working in the electric vehicle charging space in 2012, initially as part of those that were around for long enough, initially as part of the Source scheme, so particularly Source London and Source East, that was run out of the University of Hertfordshire at the time. And we did bits and pieces, and I'll be honest that when we were first approached by Source East to do some bits and pieces, I rolled my eyes and said, it'll never catch on. That's the truth. To the point where I sent some of our other guys to do the initial first jobs, and I was like, Yeah, but nobody's driving electric cars. Like, you know, LED lights at the time was the massive change. Everybody was changing all their lights to LED, and that was a lot of what the work I was doing. So, obviously, fast forward a couple of years, those, you know, ones and twos, like replacing the odd on-street charger or the odd depot charger, where they'd got this funding through this through Source East, had sort of expanded. We started getting leads directly through to ourselves for rapid charging and depot charging, etc. And I think from maybe 2015 to around 2018, 2019, you know, every time I spoke to somebody in the industry, there was this impression that this year was going to be the year. This was going to be the year the electric vehicles really took off and everybody started driving them and everybody was going to need chargers. And it took a little longer than maybe we expected, they expected. But certainly from 2019 onwards, we realized that we had to make a choice, which was to specialize in electric vehicle charging solutions. We had learned a lot by then. We understood not only obviously the electrical background of it, you know, safety protective measures, installation particulars. We were trained on several manufacturers by then. We traveled internationally for that training. So we really built up a profile. But then we had to really get into the nuts and bolts of how we kept these things running, how we supported them, and ultimately that led to us being successful in a good few tenders actually across those 3 years that were transformative for us. Really, we ended up being successful with Volkswagen, which John did a lovely little video for me those years ago, where we installed all their chargers on the Eastern Seaboard. So every Volkswagen vehicle that comes into the UK, electric vehicle should I say, that comes into the UK has been through our chargers as part of its PDI process, which is pretty cool. We installed the first raft of the DC chargers for Western Power, now National Grid Distribution, and I suppose our kind of highest profile project to date was the four plus two contract that we were awarded by National Grid Transmission, which is to install almost 2,000 sockets across their substation and corporate footprint, which we're in the last year of delivering now. So in amongst all of that, it's been a huge learning curve for us. You know, we've gone from you know, understanding our tools and our cables and bits and pieces to being asked often at the drop of a hat, I've got a problem, how would I fix said problem? How would I support said fleet? How would I make money out of my charges when I want the public to use an expert? And we know this stuff. We've been doing it for long enough that it's not just the kind of electrical background that brings us to the party, I suppose, these days, but it's all founded in that, which kind of grounds us a little bit, I guess. So, yeah, we're still an electrical contractor. We're still rooted in that. The majority of my staff are electrically trained, qualified, but we just have that kind of know-how of how to manage an electric fleet from a charging perspective, and how to keep them on the road, and how to keep them doing what they need to be doing, essentially.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcarma. Search Europcar Business.
Typically, Alan, you're quite modest in that you haven't talked at all about the thing that you're really good at, which is leadership. You have had to transition massively from a Sparky to somebody who now runs a business where you can walk into massive organizations, Western Power, National Grid, Volkswagen, and you can say, hello, we're Electrosure and we can do a thing for you, and lead the business, lead your people and set the standards. What's the transition been like for you from Sparky personally, from Sparky through to business leader?
You've dodged my defences, which is usually I talk about we, right? So nobody ever, like when everybody says, well, so what is Electrosure? What do you do? I very quickly resort to type and say, we do X, Y, and Z. And you've just asked me directly, which is a dodge. However, I'll answer your question. So I suppose if you take a snapshot that I was just discussing about that round table, there are probably hundreds of moments like that where there has been at least a fleeting moment of, oh my God, I'm out of my depth. Oh dear, I'm in big trouble. And you have a choice. And I don't know what it is about me that makes me just grit my teeth and just, I suppose, to be honest with you, the majority of it, in answer to your question, John, is determination and a genuine belief in what we're doing. That really has just never left me. We have, you know, we've, as all businesses will do, over the course of, you know, we've been around for 22 years now. So, you know, in those 22 years, there've been a series of challenges that, that we've faced and we will continue to face, and that some are minor, some are major, but realistically, I think what comes through and what I think allows us to grow and speak with confidence and to be that kind of voice of leadership and reason in those sorts of scenarios you mentioned is the fact that there's a genuine belief. It's not just words. These are what we live and breathe by, and we're determined to make sure that we deliver the best thing, that, you know, the best service we can, but also determined to make it successful for our own means, for our own families and our own personal gain, I suppose.
And you've done it again. So you've strayed into we, and you do this because I know that you have built a very strong team and people that you rely on deeply. I'm fascinated to understand about Alan Davis, the man who has had to deal with all of those situations that you speak of, the small, the medium, and the very large, as you go. You've almost had to work it out for yourself. Have you identified gaps in you that you have needed to bridge? And how have you gone about doing that?
Poor. I'm going to try and answer the question from the personal perspective you're asking for, as opposed to saying, oh, we do blah, blah, blah.
And I apologise for that, but I mean, That's part of, I think, why people listen to this podcast, is that we want to get to the person behind the name, behind the job description. And there is a fascinating human being here who is able to deal with anything that's thrown at him. Mm. And we can learn from you.
I am incredibly lucky to have my wife as my business partner. We were just talking about this morning. We had discussion about something that we disagreed about. We both got very red-faced about it. And, you know, we didn't shout. We didn't scream. We didn't, you know, make a scene. We were just out for coffee. But we were having a good long chat about it. And we both were very, very stubborn in our opinions on things. But it didn't take very long for one of us to say, okay, all right, tell me again what you mean by X, Y, Z, and it was explained, and we come backwards and forwards, and then we made a decision. That is one of my it's one of the real strengths that I have to rely on, is the fact that I always have a sounding board. I always have, as the way I said it to her this morning was, I'm really lucky that she makes me explain myself. Mm. I dread to think what it would be like if I was just cut loose and allowed to do whatever it is I want to do, because I think we'd all be in trouble. But she makes me explain myself, and I think that that's really grounding. It's really important to have somebody who you can be honest with, but also will be incredibly honest with you. When I come up with these crazy ideas of, oh, I know what we should do, she's like, have you really? Have you thought about that? And I'm like, yes, for about 5 minutes, and then off I go. I am lucky with that. I've mentioned my team, and I've mentioned the guys and girls that we have working for Literature, and they're great. I have had to do an awful lot of soul searching over these years. It's not always easy. I don't get me wrong, I love it. I think that comes across. Most people tell me that it's obvious that I love what I do, and I do. I really genuinely do. But in the dark hours when things aren't quite going to plan, and when times are tough, I'm not a religious man, so it's really just a case of a lot of the time going with my gut, a lot of the time just trusting that really I know what it is I want to do, and trusting that I will make the right decision eventually, but I won't force myself to make it immediately.
I suppose that's a kind of religion in a way, in that you've got faith, but it's faith in you to solve the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true. In amongst all of that kind of soul searching and stuff, I've realized that, you know, certain things were crutches, and I needed to remove certain things from my life that I was relying on to kind of numb certain things and whatnot. So I gave up alcohol in 2022 for that reason. I just realized that it was just becoming too easy to grab a bottle or a glass of an evening and try and shut the noise out. But actually, by doing that, I address whatever it is. I don't distract myself from it. I address whatever it is, and actually I feel kind of calmer and clearer for it. But, you know, that's not everybody's path. That's not what everybody's going to choose to do. Other people can, you know, have other avenues. They have other people, they have other ways of operating. But I very much have a way of operating that I think most people understand, but I do believe in it. Ultimately, I do believe in it, and I believe that, you know, by being genuine and honest and trying to be as transparent as I can, that eventually we will all, you know, make the right decisions and we'll move forward together. So realistically, that's where it's founded in, really.
Mm. It's a thing of beauty, because I think what we see here is authenticity and a decision to be you and to trust, as because some people are run off and lead out front and drag everybody else along with them. Other people are fundamentally a pack animal, and they just happen to be the biggest, you know, the biggest, the alpha pack animal, and that's you in this particular instance. But you recognize this particular value of everybody around you, hence that reliance on we and they and, you know, that sort of stuff. And also, you know, understanding for me, you know, because in this desk just here, Caroline will often sit, and we'll often kind of go head to head on an idea or a thought or a thing. And you're right, you know, people that we love and love us can kind of give us truth in a way that we don't always get. So I think it's brave to be as authentic as you are. And it's great to see it.
Well, I will say this though. Gillian hasn't always worked for Literature. Gillian, was a deputy head teacher, actually. She'll shoot me if I don't know this, up until about 2023. Mm-hmm. She came to work for Literature. Yeah. Without saying too much about the education space and whatnot, it was tough. She was not having a good time.
No.
And I gave her an offer of, look, come and do this for us. And originally it was ops assistant, and it was managing our services support stuff for Grid. And then she gradually stepped up to ops director, which is where she is now. And it's interesting how, when she was doing something else, when she was working in school, she just couldn't understand what I've just explained to you. Drove her up the wall. She just could not understand how I was so tolerant of certain things, how I was so pragmatic about certain things and why I didn't just, you know, charge in and shout and scream and, you know, whatever else, because that's what she did to me. But now that she's in it, now that she sees it, now that she understands, it's much easier for her to see what I'm trying to achieve and understand why I'm taking certain approaches. But I don't know, maybe that's a kind of a piece of a little gem in the dark, is that, you know, if your other half runs a business, however big, small, or indifferent, you know, or is in a senior leadership role, sometimes it's really difficult to see what it is they're trying to achieve and understand. It can be quite frustrating to watch them try and, you know, make their path through to what it is they're trying to achieve. But thankfully, as I said, she made the decision to come in with us, and we've never looked back since.
Brilliant. I mean, that's the thing of beauty in and of itself. But obviously, it brings a challenge, doesn't it? I mean, so Caroline was in education as well. She was an English teacher. And yes, not to go into one on the education space, but there are reasons why people are leaving. And so she joined the business. And what it does is bring a dynamic, of course, where you are never away from the business. You never have that obvious off button. So, and what I see behind you in this context, for those of you that are not able to watch, there are a number of guitars. And we've already talked offline about other things that you've done. How do you kind of have the on-off button? And what are the things that you do to take yourself away from work and be husband and dad and whatever?
Okay, so there's multi layers and all of that. I will say this though, and it's something that we, Gillian and I, both get a lot. How do you do what you do? How on earth do you run a business together and not kill each other? And it's what I would say about it is we've come, like I mentioned before, because she understands, because she sees it, you're right, we cannot ever truly say we're not talking about work. Don't talk about work, because sooner or later someone will bring something up where we say, oh right, oh, okay, I hadn't thought of that, and what it, sort of informally, that never really was discussed, it's never really been agreed, but we've agreed never to turn it off, which is easier because you deal with everything in smaller chunks, it's in bite size. So if I ever thought, I'd bring it up there and then. I've not dwelled on it, it's not grown into something that needs, you know, hours of meetings or even to involve anybody else. It's simply a case of, I had a thought, what do you think of this? I think this. Oh, okay, that's interesting. And then we either have a conversation about it and come to a conclusion, or decide that we need to do something else with somebody else in the business, and away we go. So it strangely means that the lights are never off at Electroshore, even when the office is closed and everybody's gone home for the night, but it works for us. You said, like, you know, everybody's got to have an outlet. I think that's the phrase that I've used numerous times. You know, I like sport and things like that. My two boys are 15 and 12, and they're both mad as a box of frogs, but I love them dearly. They're
surprise.
I know. I wonder where they get that from. They both love their football. I coach Jack's football team. I help out with Ollie's football team, which I love doing. I really get a kick out of that. And then just being dad, like, as you both know, but I am a massive child, so by consequence, if we're going to go and do something stupid, it's not the kids Gillian needs to rein in, it's me. I'm lucky to have three of the very best friends in the world that I just so happened to start a band with when we were like 11. So we've been doing it for like 29 years, and we still are. If you had a kind of fun fact, you know, what's your fun fact? My fun fact is I'm a lead singer in a heavy metal band, which nobody ever picks out that. Nobody ever goes, oh yeah, I thought that of you. It's like, really? And then the YouTube videos come up and whatever. I said, George from Greenfleet said, God, you're like Slipknot. I was like, not quite, but I get it. I'm lucky to have a few outlets that I'm really passionate about that that I get excited about, and still, like a massive kid, you know, when it's a Thursday night and it's time to go and get my guitar out, my amps, and make loads and loads of silly noise, I do still love it. Yeah, it's great.
What a great thing. But you've mentioned also theatre. Have you done theatre, or is it just stage performance?
I've got a theatre degree, believe it or not. So school was a funny one for me. I should have. Everything's in hindsight, right? So if I had pursued music, because I was playing music since I was 10, if I'd pursued music from GCSE, which I did, through to A-level, through to college, whatever, university, then life would be different, right? I imagine that life would be different, but it wasn't. I didn't particularly like my music teacher, so that was the reason for not pursuing music further than I did. I thought I wanted to be, and this is a quote, I thought I wanted to be a businessman. I didn't know what that meant, but I did. So I did business studies and stuff, and the only thing I remember from business studies doing what I do now is cash cows, and I still actually know what that is.
I haven't found one yet.
Anyway, no, exactly. So I did all of that, and did AS levels, and they didn't go great. I wasn't inspired by the teachers. I wasn't particularly motivated in myself. And in the background, I'd been doing a sort of theatre school. I'd done a couple of residencies in London and a few bits and pieces. And I was like, I have to find something to do. What am I going to do? And I thought, do you know what? I'll go and audition for the local theatre college down the road, which I did. I got in. It went pretty well. I enjoyed it. I can do that sort of stuff, but I really took to the kind of technical side of things, like as in the stage hands, stage management, lighting, sound, etc. So went to uni, same difference. I ended up running the theatre most nights. So I was the sound engineer at Student Union, and a friend of mine at the time came to see us with a bunch of my friends from home, and he said, oh, I didn't know you could do this sort of stuff, you should come and talk to the business I work for. So I said, all right. So I ended up doing a couple of trial shifts from them, and working in as a sound engineer. I did a couple of gigs for Girls Aloud and a few things at the Royal Albert Hall. We did some really cool stuff. I was the sound engineer for the England football team's press conferences for about a year or so. And we did all of that. And then the economic crash of 2008 came about, and everybody stopped spending money on those sorts of things. And I was fairly junior, and I'd upset the MD. I don't know why he didn't like me, but he didn't like me. So I was out the door for that. And the irony of all of this is, having done a bit of sort of commercial roofing, putting metal clad roofing on as a summer job, because I'm 6'4" and 100 kilos, I'm a reasonable lump, so I can shunt stuff around. I had an access platform license, so like a scissor lift, cherry picker license. Lloyd, my dad, who founded Electrure and was obviously running it at the time, had won a contract to fix some streetlights. So he said, can you operate the scissor lift? Can you operate the cherry picker? Can you get people up to these fittings? And to start with, I was getting a spark up there, and within a couple of weeks I was doing it myself, signed on as an apprentice, and the rest is history.
I love it.
Told you it's long-winded. Whenever anybody asks me, how did you get into this? I'm like, have you got 10 minutes? Because this is going to take a while.
But it's so good to hear and understand it. Because, I mean, it's funny, because as I'm listening to you, I kind of hear myself a little bit. If somebody asks me a question, I will give them an answer, and it'll have some detail in it. It'll have an anecdote or two, and it'll, you know, and I guess because I did residencies in London also with the National Youth Theatre many, many, many years ago. I never, for a variety of reasons, which we won't discuss now, but maybe another time, didn't ever get to pursue that particularly. But as a result, you end up kind of doing this sort of thing, or, you know, I like messing around with sound. I'm actually okay at it. I've got good ears, and I can sort of hear things. And so I do a little bit of sound occasionally as well. And I hear a lot of myself in you. But what that forces me to ask is that there would have been some some tough times early doors, perhaps through school and not liking teachers and kind of, you know, how did you manage to navigate that without getting in a ton of trouble like I did and come out of it the other side in a half decent sense?
Gillian and I were sat around the dinner table the other day, and there is a reason I'm telling you this. We sat around the dinner table the other day, and my darling mother had bought a bag of things from her loft that were mine that she wanted to bring over, and there were some like sports trophies in there and bits and pieces I hadn't seen in sort of 20 years. And I had always told anyone who asked that I was a good boy at school. I stayed out of trouble. I didn't misbehave. She got one of my reports out, and I swear I was like I felt like I'd been living a lie, because the first line on this report said the entire class is behind this term because Alan will not shut up. And it was like, oh dear. And then you know, as soon as my best friends in the world I went to school with, I went back to them and went, is that right? And they were like, do you not remember, like, the amount of times you were stood on your that desk, like, you know, like recite? And I suppose it's that kind of the sort of performer and the kind of class clown, you know. I see that a lot in one of my boys, so I didn't get in a huge amount of trouble because I never meant any harm by it. But clearly I always have my own agenda. I was a daydreamer. If I wasn't focused, I'd misbehave and kind of cause mischief and whatnot. But I suppose, if I'm being totally honest, the reason that I did okay at school, came out with some half-decent GCSEs and whatnot, was the fear of failure. I've always held on to that. And I've always understood that I have that, is that, you know, quite happy to mess around, quite happy to, you know, be the class idiot, tell jokes and make myself look silly at, you know, to make people laugh. But I couldn't go into something knowing full well that I'm going to fail at it. I just can't do that. So I suppose that meant that throughout my sort of educational journey, I did all right. Because if I thought, oh my God, I'm going to fail, I'd do something about it. I'd revise, or I'd, you know, look for help or whatever else. So, but at the same time, yeah, I was a little toe rag and I didn't think I was, which was really disarming. Sat around the table that night going, oh my God, okay, fair enough. Yeah.
Brilliant. Loving it.
I'm interested to understand about the direction of the business, because family business, as you've already mentioned, and here you are, not only a business leader but a dad of two boys. Are they showing any signs of liking wires and stuff?
I knew you were going to ask this. So Jack and Oliver, that's my two boys, they will both get involved in things if it's exciting, you know, like if we're building something, particularly if we're building, like, I don't know, the basketball hoop in the garden or whatever, they want to get, you know, the tools out and help me do it. Not interested if it's boring. But Ollie's sports mad. He wins awards at his PE department and his football team year in, year out, because he'll do anything with a ball, with an objective in a sports environment. He loves that. Jack is, he loves his sciences and stuff. He went to do his work experience with Audi, as in the car manufacturer, not the supermarket, which everybody thinks we all keep saying, why'd you send him to a supermarket? No, I didn't. No. And he really liked that. He really liked the kind of the service in a mechanical side of things. But if there is a stance currently of, are you going to follow in dad's footsteps? I think I told you both this. As a matter of fact, I know I did the other day. Jack's presentation for English for his GCSE year the other week was, we use terminology in the house, but why electric vehicles are rubbish. And when he showed me, because he asked me to help him finish it off, I mean, where did you get that from? And I think, to be honest with you, there's a little element of poking the bear, isn't there? There's a little element of, oh, I'll do something that'll, you know, rub that up the wrong way and whatever else. It was interesting, though, because I saw it quite last minute. So he went off to school and delivered it. And then when he came home, I said to him, go on then, tell me, why are they rubbish? And we had a chat over the dinner table and whatnot. And I think, to be honest, it's interesting to see how, because they do understand what we do. They do understand what goes on, and they hear the conversations me and Jill have. It's not something I would force them to do. Like, not something I would push on them as kids, because I have seen that in other circumstances where they've followed dad's footsteps just because they think they should, and it's not, it doesn't inspire, and they're not, you know, like I mentioned before, it's not, they haven't got that determination and that kind of love for it, and it becomes a bane, or like, you know, something that they feel under pressure to deliver. But I would love it if they did, but at the same time, I'm really keen for them to work out, and I said this to Jack the other day, I'm really keen for them to discover who they are, and without any input direction from us, just, what do you want to be, what do you want to do, you know, pursue dreams, like, you go after it, and then, you know, whatever comes will come, and if that includes me, us, the business, whatever else, great. If it doesn't, more power to you.
It's interesting, because I was, as you're speaking, trying to find some words in my head that would describe you, because there's a dichotomy here. You are somebody who is massively conformist, in that you will follow regulations to the nth degree. You will make sure that every installation is exactly as the regs are set out. But actually, there's a real rebel inside you as well, isn't there?
yeah, I suppose there is a little bit. But then again, I think that comes with, certainly in this space, as in the business, that there's that old phrase of there's no reward without risk. And in certain circumstances, you have to buck the trend, and you have to make decisions that may not be popular, or may not be, like, you know, people screw your face and go, what are you doing that for? Well, you know, there's usually reason behind it, but I'm more than happy with being the odd one out in terms of saying, no, I disagree, or no, maybe we should do it this way. Or and I think that actually, as I said, as a business, has kind of put us in good stead, because we talk about, you know, standard ways of operation, standard modes of operation, not just in this space, but in this industry and business in general. And very often we will butt that trend, we'll rebel against them and go, no, just because that's the way we've always done it doesn't mean the way we should continue to do it, and we can be better. And that has formed a lot of our processes that we stay true to this day, and actually set us apart from, arguably, from our competitors.
And for me, this is all leading to a question, because obviously the business, you know, electric cars are rubbish aside, there is a lot going on in the electric vehicle space, which of course drives your business forward, really, or a lot of it. I mean, electricians, there'll always be a need for electricians. But it makes me think, well, what does the future look like? And what does it look like for Electroshore, for you and for Electroshore? You're still young, you've got plenty of life left in you. You know, this, you're going to be
some
doing
days.
This. But yeah, I think we all have those days.
I was going to say we have days where, like, nah, I'll just go back to bed, forget it.
Shh, don't tell anyone.
I know.
But also, what keeps you interested? What excites you about the future? Is there something that you see on the horizon you're thinking, oh, can't wait for that to get here, or that's going to make a real difference? Or is there something you're excited about beyond this? Are you able to focus on that?
I think, as you say, you know, there is always a lot going on in our space, in it, particularly as electric vehicles improve, much to my son's disgust, but as much as they improve, battery technology gets better, the vehicles get better, there's more of them on the road. As we've discussed at one of your events, the used market becomes more prevalent and they become more accessible to more people. More people are going to need charging and solutions. And as you say, everybody's going to need electricians, and there is a thought in our minds as to whether we're kind of balancing the EV charging work that we're doing and just our core electrical contracting work. And I think what excites me in terms of like the business's future is that we never stand still. So in what I mean by that is I had a meeting with Aaron, who heads up our sales team, yesterday actually, for just a bite to eat. And we were talking about, you know, what this year looks like for us and what we're going to do. And as he got me talking, I gave him about four or five things I hadn't mentioned to him before that had crossed my path in the last sort of couple of weeks. And I was like, you could do this with that and this with that. And before you know it, we've got they're new revenue streams, they're new kind of ideas, they're new ways of operating that we hadn't considered before. And all of a sudden they become real because he takes hold of them and he does his bit, and I go off and I do the business case for it. And before you know it, we're talking about, supporting new customers and as I say, new kind of, not necessarily stepping outside of what we know, but just different sort of tributaries of that main sort of arterial EV solutions goal that we have, which is to provide the best service we can. I mean, let's be honest, operating a business is never boring. So that'll get me out of bed in the first place. There's always something going on. I'm not the type of person to go hunting for the golden ticket. I'm not looking for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. But I do understand that having done this for as long as I have and with the people that we have involved, if you set your stall out, if your offering is right and you deliver it properly, you'll be all right. You'll make a success of it. And we thankfully have had some really good years in the last sort of 5 years or so where we've done that. And working out what that looks like, I very seldom, a lot of people talk about 5-year plans, don't they? And you know, what are you going to do in 5-10 years or whatever else? I don't have one, namely because I don't think my brain makeup is, I don't know, I'm love for somebody to tell me, but I can't see much further forward than sort of 12 months really. But that's enough, because by shaping that 12 months you shape the next, and so on and so on and so forth. But I, as I've said before, and I say again, what excites me is I, at the very, very heart of it, I love what I do. And to be able to wake up in the morning and be like, okay, today is this, I need this to do, I need that to do. And it's always different, really, you know, is what keeps me afloat and keeps the heart pumping and everything else.
So apart from money, how would you measure success at the end of this year? You know, when you look back over that 12-month period, how will you know you've done well?
Obviously, from an accounting perspective, you look at the pounds and pennies and you make sure that you've made some cash and that you've managed to keep the staff that you had and all the rest of it. But I've long talked about a feeling, and it's... I try and describe it. When I'm with the guys and girls in our team, whether it's, you know, Gillian over the dinner table, whether it's in the office, whether it's when I'm visiting the guys out on site, or when we're all together for our Christmas do or whatever, if you're doing the right stuff and everybody believes it, that you can feel that. There's a certain energy to it. And you get it when you're in meetings with clients. If they genuinely believe that you've made a difference to their world and that you're doing what you should be, there is an energy to that room, whether it be virtual or in person. And that feeling and that positivity and that ability to, it's a warm and cozy feeling. So the little bit of kind of like patting yourself on the back and going, yeah, okay, well, I think we're doing something right here, is the thing, to be honest. I'm not big on kind of, you know, aims to populate, you know, like take over or be a percentage or be a whatever. But if the pounds and pennies make sense, and I'm, and for the majority of the time that feeling is there from our clients and our staff and those that we come into contact with through our business endeavors, then that works for me.
Trust your gut. He's right, you know.
I think so. I think we were perhaps all gut instinct players here. You know, I think that's exactly it. I mean, and sometimes it takes a lot to get the gut into the right place sometimes, especially, you know, when you've got the imposters kind of bouncing off your head. But anyway, this has been fabulous. And we have a closing tradition on the EV Cafe Takeaway. And
please don't make me sing a song.
Well, I was actually gonna just click onto YouTube and play, you know, share the screen and do that.
Okay. Yeah, good. Yeah, do that. I can sing but not sing. That's fine. Yeah, do that. That's not a problem.
I think we'll have to do it another day because I have searched but I couldn't find you. Anyhow.
Oh, okay.
What's the band name for the future reference?
We're called Before the Sirens.
Before the Sirens.
Mm.
Okie dokie. So everybody, you can look at, we will link that in the notes so that everybody can go and experience the full Alan Davis experience. I'm squirreling now. We're back to the tradition, the EV Cafe tradition. And of course, you know what this tradition is, or at least I hope you do. Anyway, the closing tradition is to present you with the EV Cafe magic wand. Yay!
Hooray!
And so there with lightning bolt and everything, it's ready and it's coming over the airwaves. Not too far today. It's only a matter of a few miles that it's transitioning over the airwaves slowly because my internet's rubbish and yours is great. But here it comes. There it is. And it's over to you and it's now in your possession.
Alan is the first one never to take it. That's never happened before.
I'm going to be honest with you. My brain went into, oh my God, mode. You know, like I said about the round table, and I was like, what do I do? Do I pretend? What on earth? Is something going to come out of the screen? The panic was real. I'd love for you to look back on that on video because I went, oh God. Oh God, what's he doing?
It's the most incredible thing. Highly intelligent men and women have just gone, oh, thank you, Paul. And every week I go, what the hell are they doing?
There you go. Alan, here's the magic wand. There you go.
My God. See, this is why I never made it in theatre.
Twice in a row.
I make the imaginary wand and I go, what wand? What wand? I don't understand.
But anyway, Let's go with that. You've been empowered by the magic wand. There we go. Right, it's still here, everybody, just so that you know. Kapow. There you go. You're now empowered. You have one wish. How are you going to use it? Please make this good.
A wish. A wish. One wish.
One wish.
Gosh, that's on the spot.
We might be here sometime, folks.
No. Well, maybe, a couple of days ago, it would have been that England win the World Cup, and that died, right? Didn't it? So, the only thing I could think of, because I'm really enjoying this lovely weather we're having, and I know a lot of people are struggling with, oh, it's too hot and whatever else, but I'm a bit of a sun worshipper. So if we can have this for the next month or so, I'm a happy chappy.
Well, can you wish for air conditioning for the rest of us then?
Okay, fine. So I wish that we have this lovely weather for the next month, but that everybody that needs it gets air conditioning. There you go. That's
my
wish.
There you go. See, that's a much more rounded wish.
There you are.
Oh, Alan, thank you so much. This has been a really great conversation, hasn't it, JC?
I've never felt closer to Alan than I do today. That moment when you said, what wand? you're so literal, just like me, and I love that about you. The other thing is I've known you a lot of years, as we said earlier, and I learned things about you today. And I think that
was really key, you know, doing the sound engineer stuff for the England football team. I didn't know any of that stuff. I didn't know you'd done Girls Aloud or indeed Gillian Over the Table, I think was.
I knew you'd heard that. I knew you heard him say that.
Oh, see, this is why I used to get in trouble at school. This is what I'm talking about. Don't say it. I can't help myself.
Oh, dear. I've just had the best time, Al. Thanks ever so much.
I don't think there's any bigger compliment that we just, it feels like we've been down the pub having a chat. You two are non-alcoholic, and me, I might even go a zero Guinness, you know, out of respect.
Way forward.
Tis a good choice. Absolutely. But it has been really quality. And if you're playing in the local area, mate, even though I don't really do heavy metal, I would come and listen to you, and the boys would love it.
The one thing I would say about that is that if you imagine what the way that I've just presented myself here on stage with the guitar, that's exactly what you get. It's completely disarming, and a lot of the time I encourage people to mock and join in the joke and whatever. So there's none of this, you know, we are before the sirens and you are our minions, and there's none of that. It's very much, you know, as we are. So yeah, by all means, you'd be very welcome.
Well, where did the name come from? Before you finish, where did Before the Sirens come from?
John, right, okay, another story. Okay, originally my guitarist, Chris, who, again, I've been playing with for many, many years, said, right, new band, Before the Storm. And I mean, all right, so we did all of our artwork and whatever else, because he's always had a thing about storm clouds and whatever else. So we were like, Before the Storm, good. Just about to launch our debut singles, music videos, etc., and we got an email through from a band in Wales called Before the Storm, who have 20 million albums knocked out and have been established forever. And they were like, are you sure you want to use our name? And we were like, no. So we had like a week, and everything was BTS, yeah, so Before the Storm. So I was like, well, it's got to end in what the before the. So we had all the stupid ideas, and then I think it might have been me, it might have been one of the other boys, but somebody went, Sirens. And I went, Before the Sirens, Before the Sirens. Right, fine. And that works for this artwork and this and that. And that was it. So yeah, it kind of came about by accident, if I'm honest.
All the best things
do. All the best
things
do. Well done, mate.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we could launch into the story of the advent of the EV Cafe, which was a complete accident as well. But there we go. We won't do that. Everybody's heard it. Alan, thank you so much, mate. It's been a real pleasure. And we'll look forward to the next time that we do something like this. Thank you as well for, we haven't really touched on it, but your silver sponsorship of the EV Cafe. And we look forward tremendously to working with you over the next 12 months. It's going to be amazing. But everybody, if you've enjoyed this conversation, we have lots of other conversations. Not sure they're all like this. One or two might be, but they've been, but they're all unique. And this has been the joy of today. Clearly passionate business leader with big personality and lots of energy to bring to this sector, and we need it. So, Alan, thanks so much, mate. And everybody, head over to evcafe.org/podcast for more like this. Check out all the links for Electroshore and Alan on LinkedIn and so on. And until next time, everybody, have a lovely day. And if you're getting too warm, it's Alan's fault. Have a great day.